Hello and welcome to Orphan Entertainment, the podcast dedicated to exploring the universe of public domain media. My name is Christopher. The task that I've set out for this podcast is too much for one man alone, so I've enlisted some help. Joining me today is a regular voice on the podcast. She was back from a brief hiatus. Welcome back, Lydia.
Thank you very much, Christopher. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. Making a second appearance on OE and adding to the evidence that he may be a glutton for punishment, please welcome back Barry.
Thank you, Christopher.
Thanks for coming back, Barry. I'm glad we didn't scare you off last time.
No, I had a great time. I am ready to dissect the blob.
Yes. Oh, this is going to be good. Yes, today we'll be discussing the 1972 film Beware the Blob, also known as The Son of Blob, I believe. It was directed by none other than the late Larry Hagman. He is best known for his roles as Major Nelson in I Dream of Jeannie and J.R. Ewing in Dallas. He directed many episodes of both of those series, as well as a few others, but this is his only feature film. Yes, the only feature film he directed, I should say. I don't know how many feature films he actually appeared in, but this is the only one he directed. Now, this was, as you might think, a sequel to the original The Blob, which I believe was in, 1958, if I'm not mistaken?
I believe that's correct.
Excellent. Steve McQueen was nowhere to be seen for this one. Rather smartly on his case.
He's probably breaking out of something.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how it was originally marketed, and I was trying to find how it was actually kind of not rated, but pigeonholed, whether it was done as a horror or a comedy. As far where would you find it if you're looking for it in the old video section?
I was hoping it was going to be blaxploitation. I was really hoping, it started and I thought, it's going to be one of those. It's going to be Blackula, but with the blob, it's going to be Blobula. But yeah, I was surprised that it wasn't actually.
Yeah, no. It was definitely done very tongue in cheek, I think. And yes, in the beginning, it does start out with a black couple. Let's see, Clarence and his wife doing some of the worst kind of acting and ad-libbing that I know of. Just keep talking and don't stop.
It's like me when I'm by myself at my house.
Do you just narrate everything you're doing?
You know, I totally get that first shot with her with the kitten. You know, my cat understands that.
We need to discuss the opening of this film.
Oh,
this
please.
This movie opens up like all great classic horror films with an adorable kitten frolicking in a field.
With the most bizarre music
That's
ever.
Right. It was. You're right. That was the first thing. I sat there with listening to this music, just watching this cat and thinking, is there a problem with the feed that I'm watching here?
Yeah, I thought I was watching the wrong movie at first. I honestly, because the credit comes up and it says, Beware the Blob. And then it's this kitten with this, kind of boink, 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 boink music. And you're like, did it switch? Is this a spoof? Are they going to start singing Never Gonna Let You Down? that's what I was waiting for.
Yeah, I watched mine on YouTube and I thought, man, this ad is long. Mm-hmm.
Imagining that kitten from all of the the flying kitten in the field. That's what I thought it was at first, but
flying kitten.
I guess I'm the only one.
Yeah, all you, Lydia, all you. If you know what Lydia's talking about, email us.
Yeah, if you see, yeah, we'll explain it sometime when Colin Mockery is available for comment.
All right. Yeah. Well, after the rather strange opening credits. We do meet Chester, who is apparently, depending on where you read, he's either a geologist, which I don't think is right.
No. He sounded like a contractor to me, like an excavator.
Yeah. I've also read technician, but then I also heard somewhere that he was just a like you said, a contractor working for an oil company up in the North Pole somewhere or Alaska, and was working a backhoe, apparently.
That would make sense for him being gone so long.
Exactly.
I thought he was an indoor tent enthusiast. That was my interpretation.
Indoor fishing tent enthusiast, apparently.
Exactly.
Indoor tent fishing with fishing beer enthusiast.
Yes, he's an indoor outdoorsman. Yes.
Yes. And yeah, you all have to watch this to really, truly grasp everything that we're going to talk about in this film. Honestly, you really need to go see this thing.
Yeah, it's...
Well, he brings back a small metal jar, which is marked sample, and he has it in his freezer.
Actually, more to the point, I think, his wife just randomly pulls it out of the freezer. After a very brief introduction with this kitten and with Chester, all of a sudden... There it is. It's, what's this doing in our freezer?
Yeah, well, she's putting some groceries away, I think.
But no explanation of how it got there until, you know, it's kind of a, I felt like it was abrupt.
Well, I think once she finds it, Chester explains that it was something with the backhoe and it just came out of the permafrost and he was going to take it somewhere to have it analyzed or something. But he wanted to keep it cold, so he put it in the freezer. Now, how he kept it ice, you know, below freezing from the entire trip from, you know, Alaska or wherever he was all the way down to wherever he is, California, to put it in his freezer, I don't know. Because as soon as this thing gets at all warm, it wakes up a little bit.
Now, did she leave the lid off? I seem to recall, and Marianne is the wife's name. It took me a minute, okay. But Marianne, did she leave the lid off and that's what happens? Because it seems like...
I believe it popped off.
It popped off, okay.
Yes, I think she bumped into it, and she's like, oh, this is freezing. I'm thinking that was just enough heat to kind of get the little blob sample to move, and it popped its top. The first thing we see it eat is a little housefly, which I thought, you know, and this is something that's, despite the goofiness of this film, the blob effects are actually really good, I thought.
For the era.
Yeah, absolutely. For 1971, 1972, I thought they were really good.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. I think, by today's standards, the technique is more obvious than it would have been back then. But yeah, honestly, it's yes.
Yeah.
Well, yes. It is some very menacing looking Jell-O.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very lucid looking Jell-O.
Well, I just remember the fly lands on it while it's still in the jar, and you see the fly sort of get sucked up into it, and it actually looks like the fly got sucked into this gelatinous glob. And I thought, wow, okay, that was actually pretty impressive.
Yeah, I want to add. I mean, at this point, at this point, she's brought the kitten through the window, and you keep expecting it to eat the kitten, but they keep keep teasing you with it. I felt like they did a good job of building that suspense, because you know what's going to happen. It's the blob. It eats things.
Right.
But they keep teasing you. You keep thinking it's going to happen, and then it doesn't over and over.
Until it finally does. Yeah, and poor little kitten gets eaten.
Samuel.
Samuel the cat. Thank you.
Samuel.
I think that's why we all went silent, because we all immediately started thinking, what was that cat's name?
I was just having a moment of silence for the cat, actually.
I love the scene after she comes back into the kitchen, or just before she comes back in the kitchen, and all you see is that the big mass of blob making its way out the window with the cat's tail still sticking out of it.
I missed the cat's tail. How did I miss that?
Yeah. You hear it, meow, meow. Poor little Samuel. You know it's bad. You're 15 minutes into the film and they've already killed a cat.
Right. Nobody's safe in this film.
No.
That's right.
They usually save pets and children at least, but not in this one.
So there's our first two victims, a fly and a cat. And it doesn't take long for Marianne to go looking for Samuel, and she ends up meeting the blob. It rolls right into her and devours her out in the garden.
Which is too bad. I liked her. She seemed like the brighter one of the pair.
She did. Yes, she did. I was kind of wondering what she was doing with Chester.
I kind of was wondering that, too. I thought she was kind of a hot mama to be with him.
Yeah, well, I think he was pretty damn happy that this hot mama was with him.
Because, never mind. Let's just keep going.
Well, there was several moments while he's, you know, loving on her and everything. I kind of got the feeling that there was a little bit of ad-libbing going on, and she was maybe he was a little bit more amorous than she was really expecting him to be.
Wow, now I have to watch it again.
So many layers to beware the blob. So many layers.
See, the blob is like an onion.
Oh, my gosh. You mean it stinks?
Yeah. Well put.
Thanks.
We're up through the blob, takes out Marianne. We get a little break when we meet some of the other cast, which is, I think we meet Lisa, I think her name is.
Yes.
And
Leslie?
No, I think it was Lisa.
No, I think you're right. It's Lisa.
Yes. And her and her friends are planning a birthday party, I think, for her boyfriend, Bobby.
Bobby. Because it just won't be fun if Bobby's not there.
That's right. And
not a party without Bobby.
Right, yes. And well, Lisa is friends with Chester and Marianne. In fact, Marianne has the present that is for Bobby, which is apparently a set of overalls with stuff on it that jingles.
Patches and buttons. Yep. Man, I mean, that's like the height of fashion. Those are back in this year, too, by the way.
Oh, good, good, good. Well, I can finally dust mine off. Well, Lisa goes to pick up the birthday present. And
now, wait.
What?
Ooh. I think we need to point out the important part about the scene, though. You know, yes. you're introduced to Lisa. You're introduced to some of her friends. They're putting together a party for Bobby. And they point out that they've made brownies.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I got really excited when I saw the brownies. And then I realized they aren't just brownies.
No.
As pointed out by her friends later, they are brownies.
I'm going to go over to Mary and get Bobby's present.
Okay, but you better hurry up. The party is very soon.
Okay. Oh, do we need anything else for the party?
Well, let's see now. No, just Bobby.
Yeah, oh, do you think it's going to be hard to get him over here?
Oh, I don't think so.
Salutations.
Hi.
I see you've got everything done. Decorations.
Yeah.
Brownies are made.
Oh, lovely.
Oh. I'm going to go over to Marion's and Chester's and get Bobby's present.
Oh, wow. I forgot to get Bobby a present.
Now I know why.
Hey, do you think you'll have any trouble getting Bobby here? I mean, it won't be much of a party without him.
Oh, it's going to be no problem. I might have to really lay it on thick, but it won't be any problem.
Okay.
Except play along with me, okay?
I will.
Tell everybody.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Bye.
Well, listen, if everything is together, then we're going to split. See you later.
Oh, wait a minute. People are coming soon.
Yeah?
Well, we're going to go discover acoustics.
Right.
We'll be
right
back.
Are you sure you'll be right back?
Right back.
Ciao.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Even accepting the time period that this movie was made in, I was kind of surprised that it was so blatant. I think because, you know, me personally, I was pretty sheltered in what I watched when I was a kid. My parents didn't let us watch anything that could be even remotely interpreted as being, you know, oh gosh, subversive. But yeah, I mean, just, you know, out there, right out there, you know, brownies.
Yes, brownies. This film is very Boulder ready. Absolutely. This film seems to exist in the late 60s, even though it's 1972, the fashion. And did you guys notice that, let's see, Miss Clark, that's the name I wrote down, one of the blonde friend, the blonde in the midst of the cluster of hippies in that scene, she's wearing a Freddy Krueger sweater.
Is she really?
Oh, no, yeah, I didn't notice.
She's wearing a red and green striped sweater. I mean, it's not an official Krueger sweater, but that is the Freddy Krueger.
Well, now we know what really happened to him.
Yeah.
It's not Freddy. It's Freddy with an I, apparently.
Yeah.
I admit, I've
so
never
many
seen
layers.
Freddy Krueger movies. See, case in point, yeah. I was sheltered.
Yep.
We're learning a lot from this podcast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, poor Chester is trying to get his TV tuned in, watching nothing else but the 1958 The Blob.
I was wondering if that was it. And
oh, yeah.
I did notice that he has an awesome chair in this scene. So any of you people who are really into furniture, you should know that the chair that Chester has is actually back in, very expensive. I think you can get one for about $3,000 right now. Great chair.
It looked really cool. It was that 70s den chair.
It is definitely back in, the captain's chair.
Yeah. Unbeknownst to him, the blob has also taken residence in his chair. and why wouldn't you?
I mean, and the numerous shots of him almost sitting in it. Yeah. And there's no other way to say it. They're butt shots. Just over and over butt shots of him almost sitting down and then not sitting down. And I thought, this is an interesting technique.
Well, it continues to build the tension, as if you weren't already on the edge of your seat with the whole cat, will it eat the cat thing.
Now you're staring at a middle-aged man's backside. It's very intense.
Oh my gosh, is he going to sit?
Why is he wearing those pants? Yes, it was very intense.
Well, apparently the poor guy does finally sit down, because Lisa arrives to pick up the present and finds him in the den, in his chair, partially engulfed by the blob.
And on the way to meet him, she runs across a Boy Scout troop.
Oh, I forgot. That's
the
right.
Worst scoutmaster ever.
Dick Van Patten.
I know he's a really well-known character actor from the time, but I kept thinking, this guy is just straight up the worst scout leader ever.
Dick Van Patten from Eight Is Enough is the scoutmaster. He's introduced chanting, 1, 2, 3, we're going on a hike.
No. I was hoping nobody would repeat that, actually.
1, 2, 3, we're going on a hike. 1, 2, 3, we're going on a hike. 1, 2, 3, hold it, men. Can any of you identify this little plan that I just picked from the side of the road? Very good. It is a mustard plant. M-U-S-T-A-R-D. The same kind of mustard that you find on your mother's kitchen table or on your little hot dogs.
Oh, but I did like the fact that apparently everybody in this town knows each other, because, you know, Lisa pulls up, she sees them, and they're like, oh, hi, Miss, whatever her name is. Oh, no, not loud enough. Hello, Mrs.
Men, come on up here, men. Look who's coming down the road. It's our old friend, Miss Clark. All right, men, let's give Miss Clark our usual good day greeting. Good day, Miss Clark. A little louder. Good day, Miss Clark. How are you, Miss Clark?
Fine, Mr. Edelman. And have you had a nice day today?
Oh, it's been just wonderful. Our usual hiking trip wouldn't be the same without running into you. Right, boys? Look what the boys and I picked for you, Miss Clark.
Oh, that's so sweet. Oh, thank you. Thank you, everybody.
A little mustard plant.
Yeah, well, Chris, you mentioned earlier how everyone in the cast is clearly improvising wildly with their lines. Something else you probably noticed as well, Lydia. Everyone in this movie seems to be seriously inebriated. not just from the brownies. Even the children appear to be a little wily and improvising madly, like Dennis Hopper in Apocalypse Now. Everything about this movie seems to be really, really stoned.
Well, I really did seriously wonder if there was actually a dialogue script. Because the majority of it does seem to be, well, okay, now you ask him what he's doing, and then you tell him what's going on, and then, you know, and when they're shooting it, yeah, it there doesn't seem to be a lot of forethought in the dialogue, if any.
Yeah. I agree. This is a very dialogue-heavy movie for a movie that doesn't need a lot of dialogue.
That's an accurate way to put it.
Yeah, well, if you believe the interwebs, which, you know, they've never lied before, the screenwriter Anthony Harris stated apparently that a good portion of the film material was improvised on the set and that the script was ignored.
Oh,
I know, surprising, isn't it?
It's shocking. I would never have realized.
Yeah, I had to think that, you know, there was, as you said, lots of drug references and lots of beer on screen, and I had to think that beer was real beer.
Oh.
And may indeed have been used for payment in some cases.
That's so funny, because it didn't even occur to me to wonder if it was real or not, because I'm so used to, well, in my naivety, I just assume people don't actually drink or do drugs when they're working. But I suppose the film industry does tend to lend itself to a little bit more lax regulation on that part.
This is a different time, though, too. This is around the time of the counterculture. This is not too many years removed from Easy Rider, the Woodstock documentary, Midnight Cowboy. It seems like this would have been the era of, you know, kind of loosely guarded sets, whereas today, you know, everyone's snorting baby powder and drinking Gatorade.
Are they really?
Yeah. Seriously, yeah. Whenever you see, like, in Blow, whenever you see Johnny Depp taking coke, it's actually baby laxative. He's snorting up his nose.
That's exciting to know. Now I know what I'm going to do this weekend.
That honestly sounds worse.
I am going to snort like a Hollywood actor. That's what I'm going to do this weekend. Baby powder, here I come. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I've never tried. I don't know if you can get like a Huggies high from that. I've never tried it myself.
Wow, mixed metaphor is bad.
Where was I?
Before the awkward silence.
Lisa escapes. Lisa finds Chester and escapes. That's it. Yes, and she goes tearing off to find someone to help her. She goes to find her boyfriend, Bobby. Meanwhile, the blob begins its rampaging, taking out a few people, including one of her friends. Oh, no, it's Cindy Williams. It's Shirley.
Cindy Williams? No way.
Yeah. They are, her and her boyfriend are in the sewers looking for acoustics or something.
Right.
Acoustics. And they get, this is actually very cool. They get discovered by a couple cops. You know who one of the cops is? Is Sid Haig.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Kidding.
No, apparently it's uncredited, but it's Sid Haig. He's one of the cops that starts to arrest these poor kids in the sewer.
A little background. Help me out here.
Oh, Sid. You don't know Sid Haig?
No. Unless he is the Sid to whom almost everybody dedicates their signatures in front of the Chinese theater, no.
Oh, come on. He's like one of these kind of sort of staples in kind of the 70s and 80s horror. He was in
all Rob Zombie's movies.
He was, of course, Drago in Jason of Star Command, the Filmation children's series.
That's right.
I think this is where we start to see a little bit of that generation gap between you guys and me, where where I'm a little bit younger than you are, and I smile and nod and say, that sounds impressive.
Well, I thought it was cool when I found out.
If I knew who he was, I would be right there with you.
All right.
I'm sorry. Those were a little before my time, I think.
It's okay, Lydia. This is the level of star power in Beware the Blob.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, you didn't realize they were in it. You may not have known who they were before, but now that you've seen it, you know who they are.
Exactly. There you go. Now you can go look them up.
I will.
All right. Let's see. We just pretty much get a lot of rampaging. Oh, we meet another pretty popular character actor of the time. Lisa runs him off the road, and I've completely lost his name all of a sudden. I can find him real good.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Richard Stahl, I think it is.
It is Richard Stahl.
Yeah, and he is a name you wouldn't know, but if you would see him, if you've watched almost any TV in the 70s and certainly late 60s, early 70s, and even going into the 80s, you've seen this guy.
Or if you've seen The American President, you've seen this guy. Or if you've seen Lois and Clark, or if you've seen, I could go down the list.
Yeah, oh, that's true. He was acting, his last credit on IMDb, he goes all the way up to 1999.
He does. So it's interesting. I hadn't really, I mean, I think he's one of those people that you've seen in a lot of things, but he's usually bit parts, so you don't really realize that he's the same guy unless you're watching those back to back, and then you go, oh, that guy was in the last movie that I watched. But he was in a considerable amount of screen.
Right.
He has a considerable number of screen credits is what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
Very poorly.
Yeah, very recognizable in the era, I think, is pretty much all you really need to say.
He probably doesn't want us to remember him for this movie, though.
No, I'm sure he's got other credits that he would like us to bring up.
Now, he does actually have kind of a remarkable part in this movie, which we can come back to later because it's closer to the end.
Yes, yeah, we kind of find out who he is. Right now, he just seems to be one of these people who think himself very important. And once this girl arrested for running him off the road and damaging, believe it or not, you know, what falls out of the back of his car?
Cases of beer.
I don't know so much. I don't know if you can so much call those props or craft services in this case.
Right. Oh, that's what they meant by the craft table. Got it.
Yeah. Let's see. Lisa finds Bobby and drags him to Chester's house, but of course they can't find any bodies.
Well, one of my one of my favorite shots in the movie, though. I'm actually serious. They've got this shot. Bobby goes in, and let's just take a moment to note also that the song that's playing says something about cocaine. Can you tell me where to score? I love the lyrics in this song, but it's got a shot of him. It's got a shot down a pitch black hallway. All you can see is the door frame. And then on the left-hand side, you see light come through as the door opens. And then he closes the door, I believe. Or maybe he flips on the light and then flips it off and it's pitch black again. And then further down the hall, you see another light come on a different side. And then that goes pitch black again. And then down at the end of the hall, you see the light come on. Honestly, for being a no budget shot at all, it's actually a really intense shot. I felt like they did an exceptional job given what they had of making this moment really tense in the movie.
And that's kind of the odd thing about this movie, although it was obviously done with no one taking it seriously and everyone having a lot of fun and being very high and or drunk or just, you know, their drinks, their Kool-Aid laced with some sort of prescription drugs to make them to keep the kids in line.
Right.
There is some really good film work done in this movie.
There are definitely moments in this movie that you're going, they're kind of almost non sequitorial. They're almost out of place because they are so good.
Mm-hmm. We get a few more victims. We get a rather flamboyant barber. No, he's not a barber. He's a hair sculptor.
And the guy that comes in, I was so hoping that the guy that comes in to get his haircut would stick around because I have no idea what his character name was in the movie, but no. He, young hobo, is that what they're calling him?
I don't know if he had a credit. I'm sure he had to.
Seriously, my favorite character in this. I was hoping that he was going to be that Cabin in the Woods character that comes back in the end and is like, you know, oh, I wanted him to be that guy, you know, where he comes back and fixes everything because I thought he was hilarious.
Ah, obviously. Are you a barber?
Do I look like a barber?
A hairstylist.
Don't you get snotty with me again, young fellow.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean anything.
I'm a stylist. No, I'm more than that. I'm an artist. What are you doing here?
I'd like a haircut.
You would like a haircut?
Yeah.
I don't cut hair. I sculpt it.
You want a hair sculpt? Yeah.
And I think it could help you.
Wow.
Sadly, though, he does get sucked down the drain with the hairstylist.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was really sad about that.
The hair sculptor scene is peculiar because the dialogue is so obviously improvised and so strangely homoerotic that the movie, at that point, it starts to feel almost like a documentary. It becomes so talkative and it starts to become about the hair sculptor.
Right. Yeah. I expected both of these characters to have more major parts because of how much, like, how involved it is with this scene. And it turns out to be a very minor kind of side scene just to make the point that the blob is spreading.
Right.
I got a kick out of the impression I got, certainly of the guy that comes in, was like they pulled someone off the street, put a wig on him, or maybe it was his real hair, I don't know. I said, okay, we want you to go in here and, you know, just ask for a haircut. And he had absolutely no idea what the barber was going to say.
And they gave him a hit of something before he walked in.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yet another pair of victims to the blob. And
yes.
And then I'm a little muddled at this point. so they go back out to, they go to the party is what happens. No. The sheriff shows up. Lisa and Bobby come out of Chester's house. They, you know, the police search the house and say there's nothing in there. Go home. And then they go back and there's the party for Bobby is a surprise party. And he's all excited. And Lisa starts kind of freaking out.
Yeah. Again, some more really kind of fun and neat little bits of camera work, I think. When they open the door and the outside's very dark and very normal. And then as soon as they open the door, it's this Technicolor craze scene with complete with man in ape suit.
Right, the gorilla guy.
Yeah, it's literally like outside is before you take the hit, and as soon as you open the door, and inside is after you take the hit.
That's exactly what I would speculate it would be like, too.
Yes. Yeah. Somewhere around this point, I think we actually meet some hobos, and one of which is indeed Larry Hagman.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's right. Yeah, I was seeing a hobo in the list of characters, but yeah, that's right. I forgot about three hobos hanging mm-hmm. out. Are they hobos or are they workers at the farm where Bobby works at that ranch? I thought they were the workers at the ranch.
They could be. I think a lot of places they're just kind of credited as hobos.
Okay.
So that's what I was going with.
I thought they were the same guys that were outside when the donkeys were running up the road and Lisa was driving like a crazy woman and she ran up and got Bobby. I thought it was the same guys, but
it could be. It honestly could have been. It was Larry Hagman and Burgess Meredith, of all people, were two of them. I thought that was pretty cool.
Really?
Burgess Meredith.
That is insane. I just assumed every character in this movie who is a hobo slash hippie was just a hippie. I just assumed this movie is... It takes place in a hippie commune. It just makes more sense that way.
Yeah.
It makes more sense that way, yeah.
It would make more sense. I would have believed it. I would have believed it. I think we're supposed to believe that these three do get eaten at the farm. They are at the farm, aren't they, Lydia?
Because they are at the farm,
they
yeah.
They do the, that's how they get eaten is you just see it in shadow, which I thought was mm-hmm. kind of fun.
Well, and then Bobby, you know, says, Lisa's freaking out. I'm going to take her to my place. And they go back to the farm. Right. And the blob is there.
They go back to, and he's going to make her a nice avocado sandwich.
Now, is it just me or is that a euphemism? I mean, come on. I don't know what that could possibly mean, but the way they keep saying it, they're like, oh, and then with bacon, with no bacon, with bacon. And then I'm like, and I'm starting to think, I think that bacon is the euphemism, actually.
Yeah, it could be, especially when she cuddles into his arm.
And
I love
says,
bacon.
I'm going to give you some bacon. Yeah, what? Now, wow, I think I'll stop. I don't know if my dad listens to this podcast or not. Sausage, I get sausage, but bacon, I don't know.
Ah.
Yeah, there you go. You can just cut that part out, Christopher.
No, nothing doing. See, I guess about this time, although Bobby hasn't really believed Lisa, they do actually find themselves trapped in Bobby's truck when the blob attacks.
Yes.
And begins to cover the truck and work its way inside. And they don't notice it, but they bump the air conditioning. And the cold air scares the blob off. So just like the blob in 1958, it does not like the cold.
You know, and I missed that as well. The first time when I was watching it, I got that they were freaking out and then just suddenly the blob went away. So I don't know if I was not being, you know, vigilant enough and missed it or if they don't really show them hitting the air conditioning.
It is very quick and rather subtle. I mean, the characters themselves don't realize it at the time.
Right.
So I think you are kind of left much like they are. You know, you see something happening, but you're not sure what.
What it is, just the blob goes away. Well, that makes me feel better.
Okay, good.
Well, I was focused on how much Jell-O they must have smeared on that windshield and what a terrible mess that must have been to clean up afterwards.
No, I kept thinking that it was just a gel. I kept thinking they just, you know, lowered kind of a rounded gel in front of the lighting.
I think I'm sure there was many different effects that were used. Whenever you see the blob, apparently it was much like in apparently in the 58, it was a red dyed silicone.
Mm-hmm.
And
so a gel.
So sometimes they would use a hardened version, you know, kind of in the, when you ever see it sort of in front of the camera, just sort of rolling. It was just like a rolling pin of goo. And then of course the more liquefied form, whenever they needed to ooze and melt over things.
Much like fake blood.
Yes.
Yes, you're right. At times it looks like rubber vomit because there's like little chunks in it and it's rolling perfectly.
Damn it, Barry, that was Samuel. How could you be so cold?
Sorry, Samuel.
Poor Samuel.
The blob invades a entertainment center, some sort of bowling alley and skating rink combo thing that happens
Before that, though, we get the Naked Turk.
Oh, I forgot about the Naked Turk.
How could we forget the Naked Turk?
You know, I mean, because he does lose his little dog too, to the blob. and then he, you know, climbs out the window and goes running off down the street. And I had to bring him up because we get one of my favorite quotes out of this movie came from his whole situation. They arrest him and they take him to the police station where, you know, oh, and then you're right. At that point, once he's arrested and taken to the police station, they go to the it's a bowling alley / ice skating rink. Is that it?
I think so. It must be some sort of it's all right there. So it must be some sort of just, you know, entertainment complex or something.
Like a fun center.
A fun center.
You may have noticed that they're having a tournament at this bowling center, and the tournament, as you may remember, is called Bowl Down Cancer.
Oh, is it? Right.
I don't think I missed that.
Bowlers Against Cancer. Kid you not.
I saw it was a cancer thing, and I remember thinking, wow, like back in the 70s, it was even a pretty prominent thing. They were using ethyl in their gas and poisoning everybody with lead, but, you know, they were aware of cancer.
And bowling for it. Or against
bowling,
it, I guess.
Bowling against.
Bowling for a cure.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's been going on that long. Come on, guys, it's been 40 years.
Still no cure.
Jeez. Just saying.
Well, more blobby consumption of people in the skating rink or in the bowling alley.
Yeah, Bobby and Murr run into warn everybody. You've got to get out of here as quickly as you can, but stay calm. Do it in an orderly fashion. You need to leave as quickly as you can, but stay calm. I think is what he says. Is that right? It's get out of here, but stay calm. I believe is what he says. And then they come and they grab him and they start dragging him away and the blob attacks.
That's right.
Comes in through a ventilation or through a vent. Is that right?
I believe
so. Eats a couple of guys that are there repairing.
Yeah, that's right. They're repairing one of the ball return and pin setters. Yeah.
Yes.
If you got a blob movie, you got to have it come through a vent at one point. That's just kind of one of these check marks. You got to have it come through the plumbing like it does with the Turk.
Yeah.
You have to have it come through a vent.
Did it come through the screen in the door too? It seems like at the very beginning out of Chester's house, it went out through the screen or came in through the screen or something.
It just went out through the window.
Oh, darn. I thought it was a screen. I thought that was a cool effect.
With the cat in tow.
Maybe with the cat in tow.
Yeah. Oh, and squeezing under a door. I think it squeezed under a door at some point.
Under a door
You got to have that, too.
Yes.
The bowling alley scene, though, that is the showstopper of this film. In the original movie, it was the movie theater. But in this scene, I mean, they slather that bowling alley with red goo everywhere. It's amazing.
It is everywhere. And I was wondering if that was a practical effect or if that was, you know, something else, because that I actually wondered if it wasn't a model of a bowling alley because there was so much goo. I thought there's no way they could possibly make that much goo to actually fill all those lanes in a bowling alley. I thought it had to be a model.
Oh, I bet you're right, Lydia.
A very good model, very convincing one. But I would bet a lot of money that was probably a model.
Yeah.
Much easier to clean up.
Yeah,
much
absolutely.
Yeah, just throw it out.
Just throw it away. After some more consumptions and runnings, I think they discover, I'm not sure, how is it they actually figure out that the cold.
Oh, no, you're skipping a whole bunch of stuff. Back up.
Oh, I know I'm skipping tons of stuff, but you know what? I mean, I want people to go watch this. I really do.
That's true. No, but no, there's a we have to go back to the Naked Turk, because that's whenever, you know, Bobby sends his friend, says, go get the sheriff. They run over to the sheriff's office and there's the Naked Turk. And my favorite line in the movie is the cop, you know, saying, oh, what's going on with him? Well, he's refusing to leave because he says that there's something at his house trying to eat him. And the cop turns to the naked guy and says, for the last time, I'm not going home with you.
OK, your bond's posted.
Here you go.
What's this?
Just sign it. It says you didn't leave any valuables.
Those stuff? Maruza.
Okay, you can go home now. Your appearance date is on this card. Don't lose it. And bring those clothes back by Monday.
I'm not going alone. There's something in my house.
For the last time, I'm not going home with you.
I thought, oh, the homoeroticism, it never stops in this film. It just keeps coming and coming. Okay, that wasn't even where I was going with it. You guys are dirty. I'm perfectly normal. But no, it's, you know, there are, you know, drug references and homoeroticism and just non-homoeroticism. They're the whole thing. And then through this whole thing, we've got this random Boy Scout troop that just doesn't seem to have anything at all to do with it. It was very weird.
I think they actually, don't they actually get eaten at some point?
No, we get to the sheriff finally says, okay, well, we're going to go to the bowling alley, find out what's going on. Meanwhile, Lisa and Bobby and who turns out to be Richard Stahl turns out to be the owner of the bowling alley.
Right.
He finally believes them that they're not crazy. They're not just trying to wreck his business. And they all run up and get stuck in the announcement booth over this deserted, non-functional, apparently, skating rink, mm-hmm. where everybody's running around below him, getting eaten by the blob, falling over, trying to grab each other, getting sucked into it. It's a scene of complete mayhem. And they get there. The police get there. And they say, get your riot gear. And they both come out with, like, butcher shop bibs and shotguns. That's it. That's their riot gear. It's, like, aprons and a shotgun. And I thought, wow, we've really improved our our safety measures for the police at this point in time. A butcher bib, I'm not really sure, is going to be a lot of protection.
It's more to protect the clothes from the gun, from the splatter from the shotgun
from
blasts.
The splatter. Well, and one thing I noticed is, I mean, aside from the fact that, you know, Lisa's main part in this film seems to be to scream, that also it seems that when you're just intensely afraid of something, it, you know, creates a speech impediment, because everybody in this movie, as soon as they get afraid of something, for example, the sheriff runs in to go see what's going on, and then he sees the blob and he runs back out, and all of a sudden he's stuttering like really badly.
The thing got Kelly. Bullets have no effect on it. I don't know how we're going to stop it.
We got to think of something, Sheriff. Plan B, Sheriff.
So
it's a sight of pure terror, Lydia.
Pure terror.
See?
If I ever meet anybody that's stuttering that badly, I'm going to think that they're being chased by the blob.
Yep. Now you know.
Yeah, now I know. I'm the only one that was thinking that. There was some remarkably poor acting near the end of this movie.
And the beginning and the middle.
Not that it's not entertaining, but it is definitely, it's definitely a blob. So meanwhile, Bobby and Lisa and Mr. Owner guy.
I don't remember his name. Yes.
I've got it in front of me, but we haven't used it up till now. Let's just call him Mr. Owner. they're stuck up in this booth and they're using the PA system to tell everybody outside what's going on. And the blob starts coming up through a hole in the floor.
Oh, that's right. Yep. Sneaking through.
Yep.
But I'm trying to remember. Oh, and wasn't it at that point that they find out it's scared of the cold?
Well, they decide they're going to burn the building down.
Right. The sheriff decides he's going to burn the building down. He can't take any chances, right?
Throwing gasoline on it.
Right.
And then the Boy Scout troop shows up again out of nowhere, and they're saying, somebody give me a match, give me a match. And one of the boys that had a lighter earlier says, mister, you're not going to believe what happened to our scoutmaster. So you know what happened to Dick Van Patten, but you never actually see it happen.
Right.
That might have to do with him not wanting to reappear in the film after his, you know, stunning opening scene.
Maybe they gave him the beer before the next scene, and so but at some point Bobby and Lisa figure out it doesn't like the cold.
So yeah, so it was a drink or something. We dropped some ice on it. I don't remember how.
They run into a refrigerator and it spills a Coke strategically placed. What's the label? There you go. Strategically placed label and ice. I don't know where the ice comes from, but apparently. And yeah, the blob just sucks right back down through the hole.
Right. And that's when Bobby puts two and two together and realizes that when they were being attacked in the truck, they hit the air conditioning and it went away. So it's the cold. It's the cold. So they ask Mr. Owner there, how long would it take to freeze the ice rink? And almost instantly. It's really fast.
Yeah, it's a miracle, because even now I think it takes how long to start up an ice rink?
Days? Don't think it freezes instantly.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't. They must have had some kind of a NASA-inspired technology for that one.
Yeah, must be. So fortunately, the blob is all within the ice rink, and Bobby manages to make his way down.
Now, this part really did bother me. This is the one part about the whole movie that really bugged me, is that they're going, oh no, the blob's coming in through the floor. The blob's coming in through the floor. And then the blob goes away and they're like, okay, oh, hey, let's go through this trapdoor in the ceiling. What? Why didn't you just go through the trapdoor to begin with? I know it was, they had to knock the refrigerator over, but really, guys? You couldn't, and he's like, oh yeah. And it's not even like, oh, look, there's a trapdoor we didn't notice before. The owner just says, oh, yeah, we can go up through this trapdoor right here. And I thought, oh, come on. Why didn't you go up through it before?
After 80 minutes of Beware the Blob, this is what bothers you?
That really bothered me. It was just so obvious. It was the obviousness of it. Not the poor execution, but the obviousness. Execution I can handle. Obviousness bothers me.
Well, after nearly getting consumed himself, Bobby manages to turn on the ice rink freezing units. And they do indeed freeze the blob in its tracks, saving the day.
And turning it into mounds of snow, apparently.
Mounds of blob snow, yes. And then everyone, of course, since it's frozen and feeling completely safe to do so, decide to walk on it as they claim their victories. Including the town sheriff, who stands there and starts his little speech about, coming together, working and, you know, defeating this and blah, blah, blah.
I've been in contact with the president and he congratulated us.
Right.
What?
This is the most incredible thing that we have ever seen.
Turn my lighter back.
It is unbelievable. Hundreds of people have been killed by this shapeless monster. What is it? Where did it come from? Outer space? Who knows? It was stopped here by a simple chemical process. The freezing system in the pipes of an ice skating rink. And by the cooperation of everyone, pulling together in a moment of common and extreme danger. If it hadn't been stopped, this blob might have devoured America. Perhaps even the entire planet. My deputies and the people did a superb job. I have been in telephone communication with the President of the United States, and he wishes me to thank everyone for their help in what shall go down in history as possibly the greatest personal danger ever confront mankind.
Unfortunately, one of the film crew that happens to be there, their lights get a little too close to the blob, and a little piece of it thaws out, and we see it inching towards the sheriff's foot, and we are left on a cliffhanger. Is it the end of the blob?
Dun, dun, dun.
So that, in a nutshell, was Beware the Blob.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, and we've hinted at it. We've mentioned it. I mean, like I said, this was an absolute ridiculous film. But there are some really shining moments in this that are just a whole lot of fun to watch and are actually really well done.
Yeah, surprisingly well done, I would even say.
Yeah.
Yes, it's fun.
I feel like if you skip the dialogue, you've got a pretty solid suspense film right here. Suspense movie, I should say.
You almost want to see it in a foreign country, like dubbed, but, you know, with a really good script written in or something.
Maybe that's the next project, Christopher. We move on from, you know, reviewing orphaned entertainment to dubbing badly done films.
And making them better. I like
making
that idea.
Better. I think so. I think, you know, there's some
dubbing
that
can only help this film.
Yeah. It really, the funny part is this is one of those movies that it's dragged down by the dialogue. Other than the dialogue, it's really very entertaining to watch.
As ridiculous as it is, I actually found the dialogue a lot of fun. The fact that it was all improvised and mostly really ridiculous, and I'm going to keep using the word ridiculous, I think that kind of is part of this film's charm, for lack of a better word. You know, we're talking about some of the shots and everything. One of the crew, cinematographer, Dean Cundey, I think is
Dean
how you
Cundey,
pronounce
yeah.
it? Cundey.
Yeah.
He went on to work on Halloween, The Thing, and Back to the Future, and even Jurassic Park.
You know, I believe that because there is some really good cinematography in this movie.
Yeah.
The music selection, I got to say, you know.
Yeah.
Shout out to Mort Garson, but I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't go on to do a lot of other stuff. To be real honest, especially considering there are a couple of songs that were actually, I think, written by him. And I think they were, maybe that was the one that I liked so much about the cocaine. But I tend to think maybe it's the one with the kitten in the beginning.
I'm going to turn that into my new ringtone, I think.
Oh, my gosh.
Complete with the occasional cat.
I don't think you can get that out of there.
So I had a lot of fun watching it. Once I realized, I was really expecting, not knowing anything about this. I mean, there isn't a lot of information about the film outside of maybe, you know, very brief kind of a few notes in Wikipedia. There, I couldn't find any behind the scenes kind of information on this. I mean, it looks like most everyone that had anything to do with it is kind of washed their hands of it. Imagine that. So I didn't know. I was kind of expecting a little bit more of a horror film and was kind of quickly surprised at the comedy aspects of it. And I think that's probably why the opening credit song strikes you as so out there, because I think you're expecting, you know, this blob gore horror thing. And you get very happy, clownish music.
Exactly.
But it actually fits with the rest of the film.
I think you're right. I think you, knowing that it's the sequel to The Blob, you expect it to be a little bit more serious. But then you're right. Considering the fact that it's all goofy, the music does actually, sets the tone for it. It sets a tone that you're not expecting, but sets the appropriate tone.
Like, my initial reaction to it was that this was either a really, 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 really bad horror film or one of the greatest comedies that have ever been made.
I think that might be a little bit of hyperbole on both ends, but yeah, it's either a badly done horror film or an outright, maybe misunderstood comedy.
Yes.
I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. As you may remember, when it was re-released in 1982, it was after the success of Dallas. And, of course, Larry Hagman was known as G.R. Ewing, and the big question was, who shot J.R.? When this film was re-released in theaters, the tagline was, the movie that J.R. shot.
That's so funny.
It is.
That's hilarious.
There's a Australian DVD distributor that packages this thing with The Blob.
Really?
On DVD. And they started distributing it back in 2011. So you can find it if you so want on DVD.
If you so choose.
But I would recommend just going to the YouTube. The actual YouTube version looks really good.
I actually watched that version. And actually, funny part about that is I was watching. I was probably about a third of the way through the movie. And the screen went dark and this face appeared on it of kind of mild shock and horror. And I was watching for a minute before I realized it was actually my reflection in the screen. I went, oh, that's what I look like when I'm watching this. But through the whole thing, you know, there'd be something going on and I wasn't really aware of my expression. And then the screen would go dark and I'd be like, oh, wow, I look really horrified. I think, again, because I was expecting it to be kind of a more serious movie and it wasn't. But I think if you go into it with that expectation that you're going to see some people smoking probably some hash and some music that features cocaine and brownies and lots of beer jokes. I think it is actually a really fun movie to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, the YouTube version is really good. I watched it on my HDTV and I thought it looked great. So,
oh, man.
Yeah, I saw it on the drive-in channel, but I say the quality was really good. This is definitely a step up from the last feature we looked at, Please Murder Me, where it looks like it's in serious need of a restoration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Not sure who originally distributed this thing. Jack Harris Enterprises, I'm guessing, doesn't exist anymore.
Probably not.
And as I've said before, many of the public domain films do end up in somebody's hands as far as DVD distribution. So that doesn't count. The reason it's being that anyone can distribute it is because no one else owns it. So there's really no need to pay for it unless you really, really feel the need to have a shiny disc, because there are many fine-looking copies online.
Interestingly, the same producer that did the original Blob.
Was it really?
Yep. And also the Blob 1988, apparently. No, that can't be right. That's what it's telling me. But I think that's an error on this website's part.
Okay. It does say it was produced by an Anthony Harris, who also...
And also by Jack Harris.
Okay, and I don't see him being as a producer, but I do see him with a writing credit.
Actually, I'm showing Jack Harris as the executive producer.
Okay, well, there you go. It kind of depends on where you go.
But that's what, yeah.
Again, sure. we are slaves to the information we can find on the interwebs here.
But that would make sense. You said the company was Jack Harris Enterprises.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect Jack Harris produced the original and the remake of The Blob, and that his hippie son produced this film that we have.
That would make a lot of sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, would you recommend people go out and watch this film?
You know, I think that I wouldn't say go out and watch this film. Maybe stay in and watch this film. You know.
Well, you know what I meant.
I love bad B films. I just love them, and this is one of those that we've watched a couple of movies that I thought there's no way I'd go back and watch this movie again. This one, as you know, here in Colorado, marijuana is becoming legal. It's not something I indulge in, but if I ever were to, I would be sorely tempted to watch Beware the Blob. Can I say that on this?
Yep, absolutely.
There you go.
We're giving recommendations. That's definitely a recommendation.
Yeah, if you're gonna stay in with some friends and drink some beer if you're over the age of 21, and you're gonna just hang out and watch something goofy and take it easy and not be too serious about watching a serious film, this is not a bad option. It's I think good fun to poke fun at.
Absolutely. Barry, how about your thoughts?
I agree with Lydia. This is a good movie to watch with some brews, some weed, and hey, how about an avocado sandwich with bacon?
With bacon!
Now, you know, I'm a completist, and I feel like this movie exists in the same way Exorcist 2 exists. It's very much like The Exorcist 2. It's tongue-in-cheek, unintentionally. It's hilarious, unintentionally. And no matter what, I think it's kind of like The Room in the sense that they probably try to make a serious-minded movie, and probably halfway through they realize there's no making a serious movie out of this. So it is what it is. But no, it is fun. You're absolutely right. It's one of the most entertaining bad movies I've seen. I do recommend people seek it out.
I was just thinking of Troll 2 in that same respect.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another number two sequel.
Another, well, not technically a sequel, but yes. Definitely a number two in the word. Definitely a number two in the movie, right? Oh my gosh.
Puns! <Norway's>
one. But what do you think, Christopher? Is this something you would recommend to your wife?
No. No, it is not a movie for everyone. But if you have friends who enjoy, do you get together and watch a sci-fi original film? Do you get together and watch old MSTs? If you got that kind of group, this is definitely the film for you. I would definitely sit down and watch this. It is a film that can be, that does not take itself seriously. They know what they're doing. It's not like anyone's going to have their feelings hurt if you laugh at this movie. Mm-hmm. So please get your friends together, sit down and have a good laugh and enjoy it, because it is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think we give it three thumbs up, three noses up. We're going to have to come up with a rating system, aren't we?
Yeah, maybe we're going to have to.
Three reels.
Three avocado sandwiches with bacon.
Three avocado sandwiches with bacon.
Exactly. I endorse that.
and a case of beer.
And a case of beer.
Right. Well, I think we have said all we can say about Beware the Blob. So I think that is going to do it for us today. I hope you everyone continues to download future and past installments of Orphan Entertainment, which you can easily do by subscribing via iTunes. While you're there, rate us, leave us a comment. If you'd like to get in touch with if you'd like to get in touch with us with any suggestions, comments, or general feedback,
if you'd like to touch us,
or touch us, if you want to touch us, you might send your personal email address. That's fine. you can join us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/groups/orphanedentertainment. You can leave us a short voicemail using the SpeakPipe app on our homepage, or you can drop us an email at orphanedent@jonja.net. And, of course, all of these links and information will be in the show notes. So until next time, we come up with something maybe a little less silly or maybe not. We want to thank you very much for listening, and we will all catch you next time. And Lydia and Barry, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you, Christopher.
Thank you. It was fun.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.